The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're back here for part two of our quarterback countdown for the NFL draft here with Gabe Ferguson. Gabe, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Ken. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you coming on. And we're talking about the top five. Seems like we're going to have, I believe, the same five names. And it's a heavily tiered quarterback draft, as we talked a little bit about before. So we would kind of expect that. But this should be interesting because I think there is a fair amount of differentiation in what I've seen of where people, how people order this top five, especially recently.
Yeah, I think if you look at it, kind of take a step back and look at the top five players, you really can pick nits with every single one of them. There isn't one that's a perfect kind of prospect. And I think that's, you know, a big reason why every person or every analyst might have a different ranking. But it's definitely some talented players. I think there's a lot of upside, and I think really any one of these five players could potentially have a very good, bright NFL future.
Yeah. Yeah, completely agree. All right, so let's start with your number five guy.
So for me, and this is probably someone who might be higher on other people's lists, but I'm going with Will Levis out of Kentucky as my number five quarterback. So there's a lot of things you like from him from a kind of a physical perspective. He's big, got a big arm, athletic, you know, he played well in a good SEC team. I think, you know, that is a good bonus for him. I think, you know, the level of competition that he played against every week is something that's going to help him when he gets to the NFL. My concerns with him are similar to some of the concerns I had earlier when we talked about Hall. I think he has some issues with decision making, he's not the most accurate in my opinion. And those are kind of the two knocks that I would have on him. He also puts mayonnaise in his coffee, which is just weird.
I didn't know that. That's correct.
but I think you see the upside with him. I think he played in a very pro-style offense, which I think benefited him in college. But I think it might also be something that could be a detriment when he gets to the NFL, because you don't have that, you know, ability to kind of move into an offense that's really going to be better than the one you necessarily played in college. So it's kind of the same thing we talked a little bit about with Stetson Bennett, to some extent. So I think there are things about him that are positive. He wouldn't surprise me if he ends up being, you know, one of the better quarterbacks out of this draft class. But I get kind of the vibes of he was the guy that the Bears drafted. Mitch Trubisky. I get Mitch Trubisky vibes from him.
I was going to say Sam Darnold.
Mitch Trubisky. I see some of the same things. Kind of like he has athleticism. He's got like a good arm. Like he can move around and make throws on the run. But when he comes like down to like making plays under pressure, he's willing to stand in the pocket, but is he going to make the right decision? That I'm not sold about.
I think you hit on a lot of really important points there. 6'4", 229, kind of reminds me of the Pillsbury throw boy a little bit, Jared Lorenzian. But he has one of the things he has that's really unusual for the class is 10 and 5/8 hands. These are absolutely enormous. Should not have a big fumbling problem in the NFL. He also gets rid of the ball very quickly. It's a little bit unusual for a guy his size. It does happen sometimes. You know, Roethlisberger, we've seen it recently, but 2.58 in terms of average time to throw. Some of that's also Kentucky, by the way. They're not a good SEC team, and obviously playing against a pretty ruthless pass rush week after week would be a difficult row for anybody to hoe. Kind of a throwback in terms of being a pocket passer. Only a passer rating of 96.5 in NFL terms for his college career. That's a level that usually NFL defensive talent will really punish. Everybody is better. He's going to face unbelievable, freakish defensive ends who will put him on the ground hard. He's going to face tackles that can occasionally push the pocket very effectively. Defensive tackles, I'm talking about now. Corners and safeties who know what they're doing and can read him better. He's going to be under siege from all angles to maintain, you know, that kind of a passer rating. And frankly, he's got to get better as a passer of the football. You mentioned some accuracy issues. Quick release is often mentioned as something that reduces his accuracy. I didn't know that was, you know, had to be a thing. So I think maybe it's more a case of just building up his accuracy with that quick release and not trying to undo his quick release, which is probably one of his good features. So I didn't really like that. He's taken a lot of sacks at Kentucky. It's almost every quarterback who gets drafted and plays soon gets into a bad situation in terms of their offensive line. You're not as good as what you had in college. But he's one of the few guys who actually might, even if it's just an average NFL offensive line, he gets might actually do better in terms of what he's got. So that's a possibility. Levis, very good reacquirer of the field. So I did like that about him. RPOs go all the way into the mesh. He kind of gets low and goes into a squatty knee position sometimes with that mesh point that may sell it more, which will be interesting to see if he can do that. It's a form of turning your back because he's not seeing the whole field in the same way when he's squatting into the mesh like that. So he's really trying to sell it and then reacquire. And I think that's a positive that could translate fairly well. When he had good time, which wasn't all that often, but there's plenty. If you want to watch his highlights, you can certainly see this all over the place. There's good examples of multiple reads and the use of wide angle vision. So you can definitely see he's got time. Read one, read two, read three are happening. Quarterbacks don't really ever get to read five. You sometimes talk about it. If you have an extended play, you might break down, then all of a sudden you throw hit a fullback. Maybe that's, you know, read four or five on a play, but it really doesn't happen very often. And when the time to throw standard is you really hope your quarterback can hold it for 3 seconds to extend a play, you know, they just can't make that many reads in that period of time. But what he does very well, I thought, was look at the field with that wide angle look where he's really trying to process multiple receivers and choose between them on the go. And that also throws off the safety, throws off whoever is that either under coverage sometimes, but most importantly, it's probably the safety in terms of racking up yak and in the case of a linebacker, not getting a underneath ball tipped because he gets read easily and a window gets closed. So those are good things. I liked it. He really runs through contact as a runner. He is a tough SOB and he'll run you right over after he breaks the pocket. I think they'll coach that out of him at the NFL level because I think it's just too dangerous. He'll eventually get hurt. I would think doing that definitely is not a Lamar Jackson, I'm figuring out how to go down guy. He doesn't know how to really take a tackle well because he's always running directly into that contact. He's not elusive enough to make other people miss. They have to take whatever tackle they can get. It's more of a, they know exactly where he's going and they have to figure out how to get him down. And that might be low. And if that's the case, he needs to not do that in the NFL level because he'll get hurt. I think, you know, he's been clearly pegged as one of the top four guys for a long time here. And there was even talk that the Colts were the guy were in love with him at number four, that one of the other teams, he might even be drafted number one overall, given who he is. I just don't see it. I mean, his college play is not at that level. He'll be 24 years old in June. It's not anything about his age and developmental prospects that should look so great. And I think if you put him ahead of any of the four guys, or certainly any of the top three guys that we're both going to have probably in the top four, I would, you know, I just think it's kind of arrogance on the part of projection. I don't really like to over project players. The big example came up this year, by the way, at the cornerback position, where Christian Gonzalez is getting all the love. Mm-hmm. And he's thought of as being, you know, the top corner, and everybody's in love with his height and weight. And I understand that. He's 6'2", over 200, and that's a nice thing. It's a great place to be if you're a cornerback. And he could easily be Jimmy Smith type cornerback in terms of that. The guy who presses the sideline and whatnot, but give up 8.8 yards per target this last season. That's bad. That's yeah. really bad for an NFL, you know, ready cornerback to do. And the other guy in the group at the top of the class is Devin Witherspoon. Well, he looks less impressive physically, doesn't fit the mold exactly, being only 5'11", and you can point to other shortcomings. But the fact of the matter is, Devin Witherspoon has better instincts. He plays faster than he is, and he's allowed less than 3 yards per target. Guy last year was Trent McDuffie, who was just outstanding results, and he was actually knocked by some NFL people. He fell in the draft a little bit further than people thought, and he ended up having a great year for the Chiefs in terms of what he did for them. And you know, he's got a Super Bowl ring, and so are the Chiefs, frankly, because of some of the things he accomplished. Anyway, I like Levis. I wouldn't project enormously forward in most part because of his age.
Yeah, the age is something that I failed to mention, and you're absolutely right. You know, he was a transfer, I think, out of Penn State.
Yep.
And he didn't make it there, so he went to Kentucky. For someone who you're thinking about taking very highly in this draft, to be 24 years old coming into the NFL, I think that's definitely a red flag for me. So, I mean, I think he probably goes top 10 if we're like kind of like placing a bet on it. I think that's probably where he ends up, but it wouldn't surprise me if he falls a little bit further than some of the people are thinking, for sure.
Yeah, I think he could go in the top 10. And if I'm expecting five quarterbacks to be gone by about number 20.
Yeah.
And I think after the Seahawks pick, who definitely have room to take a developmental guy, you know, we'll see five quarterbacks gone. If it's six, and I think the only way that happens is if DTR, somebody sees the upside in him and wants to buy into that. I don't think there's another guy, honestly, down the line who deserves it. I think then you could potentially see six guys go in the first round, but it'll be interesting because I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on those picks around 16 through 19 to get the kind of the last quarterback that people believe in.
So you have him as your number five then?
My number five guy, yep.
Okay, so we're the same, all right.
We're the same. Number four guy, we might have the same all the way up, but let's hear your number four guy.
For me, it's Hendon Hooker out of Tennessee. Really phenomenal past year. One of the best deep balls you'll see out of a college player. He's got accuracy, he's got the trajectory. He can get the ball deep in a hurry. It's not something that's a long, like kind of arching rainbow that most NFL quarterbacks can throw, but he can really put it on a good trajectory. You know, he has some upside from athleticism. He obviously had a very bad injury to end the college season, so that I think that's a big question mark. Then the other kind of thing we talked about with Levis as well as with Hooker is the age. So he's also going to be an older quarterback. I think he's going to be 25. So that's something that is a negative for the same reason it is for Levis. But I think the upside with him is greater. I think, you know, to a certain extent, he played in a more simplistic and quarterback friendly offense, even than Levis did. He had good wide receivers, and they schemed them open very well. They kind of did it was a little bit of like an air raid type offense. So some of those numbers are a little bit maybe overly exaggerated, but you know, the raw ability to push the ball downfield is really exceptional with him. And I think that's why for me, I would definitely be comfortable taking him in the first round.
Yeah. Both of, we did the wide receivers the other day, and both Hyatt and Tillman Hyatt's my number five guy, actually, among all the wide receivers. I really like him. And Tillman was an honorable mention for me. But to have two guys like that on the outside, there's not too many teams, Ohio State maybe, who's in a similar place in terms of having really top receivers. Still, he's the SEC Offensive Player of the Year for a reason. I think the ball is out quickly from him, which is not completely surprising. It's 2.60, but not the play extender you might expect him to be with his athleticism. But part of that is that he does throw a lot of deep balls, and deep balls come out quickly. So you actually throw a deep ball oftentimes in less than 2.1 seconds, just because most of the time is the ball traveling downfield to find the spot. I thought what was really exceptional about him on the deep ball was he knew how to throw to a point on the field where the receiver on either side, whether it was Tillman or Hyatt or even somebody else, did not have to give up all of the lead they've achieved on the defensive back they had beaten. So, you know, where they had made a good move and gotten free by whatever means, some of it physical too, by the way, then they were able to maintain that lead because Hooker didn't underthrow the ball by too much. Now, one of the things, if the wide receiver has the defensive back beaten, underthrowing the ball has value. And in the NFL, this is true too, because you have a much higher chance of getting a pass interference call because a trailing man in man coverage in particular is not going to be able to look back for the football in the same way because he has to catch up. That's the primary thing. So most of the time he's going to be hands through. And if you can underthrow that ball a little bit, obviously decreases the chance of the overthrow. And you still really give yourself the classical two positive options in terms of the completion or the pass interference call. Hooker did that very well. Touch on the long ball is exceptionally good. It's all rainbows, drop in the bucket, beautiful shots. And I agree with you, by the way, he's perfectly comfortable throwing a flat football. Mm-hmm. A lot of quarterbacks in the past, and you don't have to look any further than Kyle Bowler as a guy who never really developed that deep touch. Not at the NFL level anyway. He was a guy who wanted to throw a ball on a line all the time. And when it's not open, it's not open. And you don't want to be throwing the ball on a line deep very often. So I really liked what I saw from Hooker in terms of his touch was exceptional. Got the ball out quickly enough that he was not under throwing the receiver particularly often. All the things about his eye level, his size, the arm angle, the release is a really good combination for throwing over linemen. And he's one of the few guys in this draft at 6'3", 217. He's got very big hands, by the way, too, who can get the ball over the line of scrimmage without having to create artificial windows of these sidearm three-quarters throws, which I think they're good if you can do them. Hey, it's fantastic if you're Mahomes or Lamar Jackson to probably a lesser extent, and you're a magician with those kind of throws. That's great, but that's something you have to develop to get by, because your overhand motion won't necessarily get the ball there. So Hooker is a guy who is really going to get the ball over the line very effectively at the NFL level, and won't be knocked down too much by defensive linemen. Thought he navigates the pocket fairly well on extended plays. He's not really a natural rollout extender. You don't see a guy who says, oh, I'm here, I feel pressure, I'm going to roll right now. If the play is a design rollout, sure, he can do it like anybody down the red zone. But if it's I have to create and move, that's not really his game as much. Does scramble a little bit, but he's really a straight line runner. Another Tyler Huntley guy, limited wiggle there. It can get you some yards, don't get me wrong, but I don't think he's a particularly great read leverage guy, nor a throw wiggle guy that makes somebody else miss. And you know, you rarely get both those in one runner. Then you're talking about Jackson or Gale Sayers or somebody like that. But if you have one of the two, like DTR, I think is a really good leverage reader, not necessarily a great wiggle guy. He's got a little bit of wiggle, but he's a really great leverage reader. That's very positive. You don't have to have both. You just have to have one. I don't think really, it's not really Hooker's game in either case. Got some speed, but that's not really his thing. And we'll see what he's got left after coming back from this injury. I'm very interested in where he goes. I think he is a consensus number five guy, but I've seen talk just today that one guy thinks he ought to be the number one quarterback in the whole draft, which I can't see from an availability for season one perspective. But who knows?
Yeah, that's a little bit too rich, especially because of the injury. for me. If maybe without the injury, you could consider that, but with the age and the injury combined, that's not something that I would be willing to go to. But I do like him a lot, and I think he has, in some ways, just as much upside as the other quarterbacks in this draft. I think the one thing that for me is probably the biggest question mark is the age, more so than the injury, because is he able to kind of develop more, or has he kind of had his peak already, playing in a college offense that was it was kind of like, throw the ball all over the field. What does that look like in the NFL? Even though he did play good competition, obviously in the SEC, and he led his team to a much better record than like a Will Levis did, for instance. And he did have good receivers, but he wasn't playing on the most talented team in the SEC by any stretch. And I think his play was a big reason why they did as well as they did.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, he had good weapons, but I would agree with that statement. That's fair. And he's really the one old guy who's still a V guy candidate. You know, he's 25 actually in January, so he's going to be 26 right after the season. And yet he's still a guy who I think could be the guy for your franchise. If you're looking for a 9 or 10 year solution at quarterback, he could still be the guy. But we'll have to see how he's looked at. To me, he'd be too rich in the first round, even if the Ravens had a chance to draft at 22. I think I'd be I don't think I could pull the trigger on that. Even though I have him ranked as high as I do, I just don't see the fit at his age for it to make sense. Even though in a lot of ways, if Lamar's leaving and Hooker's coming in, it could be kind of a perfect transition. It'd be bumpy as hell, by the way, if that actually did happen, but it could be the perfect transition. I wouldn't see that as a reasonable option, but he's a guy, if you can afford to wait 1 year, he could be perfect.
Yeah, and I think he can come in and be an effective NFL starter right away because of the experience level, the high quality of play that he's demonstrated. So,
All right, Hooker also my number four guy. So we might go 5-4-3-2-1, which Crawford and I did at guard last year. So let's hear who your number three guy is.
my number three is Bryce Young. I have him there strictly because of the size outlier. He is terrifically good playing quarterback, good at playing quarterback, but his size is an extreme outlier for the position. Not only is he, I think, 5'10", but I mean, he weighed in at, I think, just over 200 at the combine, but you watch him play, he does not play at 200 pounds. He probably plays at like 190. And he did suffer an injury this past year at Alabama, and he has a very slight frame, and he's not someone who's going to be able to carry and put on more weight. I think it's a concern that's very real. He would be an extreme outlier to have significant success in the NFL at playing at the quarterback position for his size. When you watch him play, he's almost a wizard with the ball. Very like, I kind of want to say Drew Brees-esque, not to compare him directly to another small quarterback, but just the ability to read the field, to make the throw with accuracy anywhere he wants it. He is good at navigating the pocket. He does so many good things. I think if he was, 3 inches taller, he would be talked about as one of the best quarterback talents to come out in the past 10 years. But because of the size factor, I don't think you can get there with him and feel comfortable about it. So it's disappointing because I think there's a chance that he could still be, really exceptional in the NFL, but he has to be in the right position. He has to play behind a very good offensive line, I think. He has to have, a good system that's going to work for him. But it's a risk, I think, to take him at a, top three, top five pick, just because of that outlier factor of him being so small.
Well, I think those are all fair criticisms, and the height is certainly the question that the NFL teams are going to have to grapple with in terms of deciding where he goes. I do think he'll probably go in the top four, so we'll see. I had him at number two. The 3.02 time to throw brings up an entire series of questions related to him, because one of the criticisms of him is that he can't really stand in a normal pocket because he can't see over it. And we saw Russell Wilson move to Denver. Russell Wilson is just about the same size and had a lot of problems seeing over the offensive line. The Denver fans, and you know, I had one of them on the show before the Denver game last year, were just, you know, saying this is a mismatch and whatnot. In a lot of ways, Bryce Young's an interesting cat because I think he kind of negates the value of a good offensive line in that since he can't stand in a normal pocket and he has to always be creating, extending, and moving, it might almost be a better fit for a team that you better still have the blind side pretty well protected because you don't want him taking hits from there. You don't want a lot of fumbles occurring because of that. But if he has the same kind of ability to maneuver in the pocket and, more importantly, feel the pressure coming from the blind side in his career and know how to navigate around it, as we've seen from Jackson, for example, then he'd be a great pickup for someone. And it doesn't have to be someone with a really great offensive line. I think they could maybe get by without that, would be my, it's a counterpoint. I don't mean to just contradict directly, but that would be my feeling about it.
I totally understand that. I mean, to me, it's just a concern about if he takes a hit, like if he has a bad offensive line and he gets creamed by a 300-pound defensive lineman, you know, that might be the season for him. And you know, we've seen players, Tua, for instance, another Alabama quarterback, Slater of frame. He's had, you know, concussion issues, but he's also had, you know, he had a hip injury. Like it's really, I think, something that has to be considered in today's, you know, NFL, even though they are, you know, protecting quarterbacks as good as they possibly can, better than ever in the history of the league. But it's still a risk that, you know, a player's career could be really derailed if he doesn't have the frame to kind of take the pounding that some quarterbacks take. And he does do really well with avoiding pressure. I think that's great. He moves around, slides around the pocket with ease. He keeps his eyes downfield. He finds open receivers. He makes, you know, he throws his receivers open. There's so many things you love to see about his ability as a quarterback. It's just that one.
Hey guys, I want to tell you about the Eufy Video Lock, because when I'm not podcasting, I am. My day job is a smart home specialist, and the Eufy Video Smart Lock is perfect. This is what you guys need to go get. It replaces the deadbolt on your door, so now you can come home without fumbling with keys. You can just type in a code, or even better, use your fingerprint to unlock. After 1 second, you put your finger there, pops out, my door's open. It's perfect. It also is an integrated video doorbell. We've all seen the video doorbells. We all know the ones that are out there. I've seen many of them get stolen. No one's going to steal this because it's your door lock. It's impossible for them to steal. There's no monthly fee. Other ones do. But this one, it'll record locally, so you never have to pay if you don't want to. The battery, it lasts up to 4 months. Plus, it notifies you ahead of time. And I mentioned earlier, 1 second fingerprint recognition. No, I meant 1 second till it opens. The AI self-learning chip will learn your fingerprint even faster, and then it opens up. Completely keyless entry. No more keys. And I know I set this up as I'm a smart home specialist, but anyone can install this. All you need is a Phillips screwdriver. That's it. And then you're done. Guys, I love this product. Make sure you check it out. Now, here's the easiest thing to do. Just go on to Google or whatever you prefer and search Eufy Video Lock. That's EUFY Video Lock. Or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your door, just like me, just like Ken.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1 pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today.
Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Question.
Yeah. And I think everybody's got that on their mind. 7/25/01 is his birthday. So he won't even be 22 until July. So we've beaten all up and down on a lot of the other 24, 25, and even 26-year-old quarterbacks about their age. It's only fair to give Bryce Young the credentials here. He's the guy he is at a very young age. And I would not disagree with the injury risk. I think there is some of that in particular. Some people talk about maybe being able to add muscle the way Lamar has, even if he's 5'10 is where he's going to be at his height until he gets to be about my age, and then he'll be 5'8 from being 5'10 at his age. But he'll probably have some ability to put on muscle and be a little bit of a tougher guy, and that will probably cost him some mobility to do it. We did notice that with Lamar, that he didn't quite have the same top gear as he had before. But I think that you know, so much has been said and so much has been made of Bryce Young. I think he's been the number one guy, presumed number one guy, for a long time in this draft. He's not my number one guy. I think the number one pick is pretty clear from the top three. But maybe we move on and talk about that a little bit. Ready to go to my number three guy?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So my number three guy is AR-15, Anthony Richardson out of Florida. I really do love him. I mean, I see, you know, that size, what he can do on the field as an athlete, just jumps off at you. You know, tacklers fall off him, 10.5-inch hands. I don't think he's going to be a fumbler in the NFL. The 4.43 40, you know, just what he looks like running that is just incredible. So, you know, it's the only other more incredible 40 time there was Adebore, the defensive lineman who ran, you know, 4.49 or whatever it was at 270. But, you know, jumps like a power forward. I mean, 40.5-inch vertical, 10'9" broad. And here's the kicker. Anthony Richardson is not yet 21 years old. Yep. He will not turn 21 until May 22nd. So if you want to project development, he is the most reasonable guy to project development upon, and certainly was one of the great combine performances of all time. You know, he's got wiggle and power as a runner, so I love that. I'm going to talk about some of his positives, and we'll get to the negatives here. If you go back to that Eastern Washington game, his run, it was sideline to sideline. It was a third gear all the way. So he never was in really top speed, but he ran all the way to the right sideline and kind of tipped to the sideline, didn't go out of bounds, runs all the way back to the left side of the field, gains a bunch of yardage, and eventually goes out without being touched, crossing the entire football field without being touched. It's just one of those plays that will stick out in my mind for, I think, a long time. The 3.18 average time to throw is indicative of the play style. He's really a natural extender. He's looking to run and he's looking to pass at the same time. Sometimes he definitely does take his eyes off the field and looks to be a runner before he has to be a runner. I think that's something that can probably be coached up at the NFL level. So there's a lot of improvement to see in his game just during his time at Florida. So I think he's got a good chance to become better. I think even when extending plays, one of the nice things to have is that you're not easy to bring down, and Roethlisberger certainly had that. He's got it too in spades in terms of a, you know, it's it's very difficult to sack the guy. And I will say that is completely not normal for dual threat QBs. And in fact, dual threat QBs, because of the nature, they can take shorter sacks, but they generally take a lot more sacks than anybody else. Randall Cunningham, who might've been one of the great dual threat QBs of all time, was sacked on more than 25% of dropbacks in his rookie season. Just incredible. Might not have been a rookie season, but first year as a starter. Anyway, it's just ridiculous. Now, Richardson, by comparison, was sacked on 3.5% of his dropbacks this last year. So there is an NFL versus college difference you have to consider in that. You know, obviously, he'll face another whole level of defenses and speed of the game and all the things that go with the NFL level, but I still think he's probably going to take less sacks than most other NFL quarterbacks and certainly most other NFL quarterbacks of the same type. Just a mid-80s passer rating in college, obviously that's got to get better. And I think there's hope based on age and tools that you're getting that. One of the things you really notice, you can just watch his highlights for this. Don't even have to watch a full game, which I would recommend, by the way. If you're going to try and look at a quarterback in particular, try and watch every throw from one game, and you get a kind of sense of the breadth of things. But if you watch his highlights, look how many of his highlight reel alone are throws behind the receiver where it's the receiver making a good play. And it's uniformly, the throw is late. Ball's on the back hip of the receiver. He catches it and makes a huge play after the, you know, run down the field after yak. And I say, you know, that's a highlight for this receiver. It's not really as much for Richardson in terms of how good a throw that was. He would do really well to get a QB guru. And, you know, Joshua Harris might be the right guy for him. You know, he certainly helped Lamar but whoever it is, he needs to spend his off seasons learning how to improve his game as a quarterback. As much as he can. The Ravens obviously won't catch a whiff of him. He could go number one overall. I think that it's not out of the realm of possibility, but I certainly don't see any way he lasts past number four in this case. I think he probably is the most likely. Yeah, I don't see any way he makes it past number four.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think there's a real chance he goes number one, and I actually have him as my top rated quarterback in this class. Because I think, like I mentioned earlier, there isn't one quarterback who has all the tools, who has everything going for him. And I think if I'm going to be taking a player over number one overall, I want someone who has the upside. And I think Richardson by far has the most upside of any quarterback in this class. You know, he has freakish athleticism, not just for a quarterback position, but for like any NFL player. What he did at the combine was insane. It's a rare talent, just ability that he has from athletic standpoint. As a quarterback, he is absolutely a work in progress. I think, you know, there are some things that you see from him that you say, okay, there are things I can work with there. He isn't the most accurate for sure. That's something that he's going to have to improve on. But I think that there are plays where you can see that he has, you know, the ability to play within, you know, a standard, like kind of NFL, you know, drop back and throw it. And like, he has the arm strength to make pretty much any throw on the field. He can get it there in good time. I think that his mechanics are actually pretty good for someone who is fairly raw as a player. And that to me is, you know, it's a good sign that he doesn't have to like, kind of like, unlearn and relearn that whole process of like arm angle and footwork and things. I don't think he's like needs a huge amount of work from that perspective. I think there needs to be more consistency in his game for sure. He didn't play in what was like a great offense, I don't think, at Florida. He was, you know, he was asked to do a lot with his legs, as well as with his arm. And I think that's part of who he is, and it's part of who he's going to be as an NFL quarterback as well. But I think if you take all the tools, you take the fact that he's 20 years old, that he's really only played quarterback at this high level for 1 year, that there's just a huge amount of upside with him. And I mean, the other player we're going to talk about is a much safer pick, 100%. But I think that, you know, you could potentially have, you know, a superstar with Richardson. And I think for me, that's why he's my top rated quarterback because of that.
Yeah. I think that entirely fair, and I wouldn't really in any way berate having him as the number one guy, no matter what. He's number three for me, but that's just the case of it. In terms of, let's say the Ravens traded Lamar Jackson, because it's the only way this could happen, and got the number one overall pick this year. Okay, now Carolina's not going to trade the number one pick for Lamar Jackson, but let's live in this alternate reality for a second and pretend like it could happen. Who would you take among the guys?
I would take Richardson. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think he can step in and be a starter right away. And yes, he's going to have some, you know, probably developmental needs as a passer. But I think what he can provide you as a runner, and he has the frame to really be a running player in the league. At the bare minimum, you're getting someone. I think it's like a Justin Fields, and I think he has the upside to be, you know, someone of maybe even like a Josh Allen caliber type player, who is that true like NFL caliber dual threat who can pull down and run, and he's more athletic and he's faster than Allen is, and you know, Allen wasn't a great, you know, prolific thrower of the ball in college. He had accuracy issues, but he was able to hone his craft and become a much better passer when he got to the NFL, and I think that's on the table for Richardson too. So that would be my pick for sure.
All right, well, fair enough. I don't think it'd be a terrible pick. I probably like my number one guy more, but let's move on and talk about the next player. I guess we've only got one guy to talk about left, but your number two guy is,
yeah, so CJ Stroud, Ohio State quarterback, very good player. There's nothing that you look at him and say, okay, he has a big weakness. So I want to get that off the table. But I think there are areas where he excels and areas where he's not quite as good. I think he's like I said, the safe pick in this class if you're picking number one overall. One of the things that concerns me is the level of talent he had around him playing in college. He had two players who could potentially be top 10, top five wide receivers, or drafted in the top 10 of the NFL. I think we'll see with Jackson Smith and Jigba, but I think Marvin Harrison Jr. will absolutely go in the top 10, if not higher. And, you know, he's played with NFL caliber wide receivers throughout his entire time at Ohio State. Great running game. You know, he's had all the things around him to excel. What happens when those things break down a little bit? You know, we've seen him in some big games play at a very high level. I'm thinking about the college championship game this past year. He really stepped up his game. There have been other times in the past where he's kind of not stepped up to the moment. You know, like the Michigan game, for instance, I think is a shining example of when there's pressure in his face, when there's things, a good defense that he's playing against where he hasn't been able to play at that next level. So there's some concerns there, but I think, you know, you're getting someone who's extremely talented, who's got, you know, all the numbers that you could ever want from the position. He is athletic enough. He doesn't really do too much with his legs. I think that's something that you could do more with him. But I think that he has all of the tools to be a really good NFL quarterback.
Yeah, I would agree. And some of the physical traits, which we haven't completely talked about him, he's 6'3", 214. He meets your basic size requirement, 10-inch hands. You know, that's going to be good in terms of reducing the fumble risk and getting a better, maintaining accuracy, maintaining a nice tight spiral with an NFL ball. 10-3-0-1, so he won't be 22 until October. That's a wonderful age to be for getting your first opportunity to lead an NFL team. Obviously, had a great combine as a thrower. Accuracy was really his calling card at OSU. Fantastic set of receivers. I don't disagree with you any of your context comments at all. He certainly played with a great offensive line, played with a set of fantastic receivers there. You know, I made a unfair point about JSN and how his production actually slipped with becoming the number one receiver after, I'm missing the guys, but Olave and the other guy from Ohio State who left, who was done last year, but it's great.
He went to the Jets, and he's also slipping my
head. Garrett Wilson.
Yeah.
So you know, after those guys, you know, left the team that and Jigba didn't have as good a year, but it's, you know, still it is what it is, and you know, I think that Stroud can't lose everything on context. One thing I really hate to hear this, and this is a little bit off target, but the 2000 Ravens, if you ever talk to a Bears fan or a 2002 Tampa Bay Bucks fan or a 1991 Eagles fan, they always try and put down the Ravens defense of 2000 because they played a schedule that was fairly easy during the regular season. And one of the things is you can only play the teams in front of you. And the second thing is, as great as they were during the regular season, they were even better in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that's where the other teams really can't say it. And the funny thing they try and do, and this is really hilarious, is the Bears fans, they want to talk about the 1986 Bears regular season because that's where they really have a low point total. And they want to talk about the 1985 Bears postseason and combine those two somehow into one season. But it really, the 86 Bears, of course, got eliminated in the first round by Washington. So I always find that conversation to be particularly frustrating. If you want to kind of yank my chain a little bit, try to bring that up online sometime. Getting back to Stroud here, very few interceptable balls on the season. A lot of on target balls. You really see that. Just looking game by game for him. And he had a couple of very long streaks, I believe, of no interceptions, like a 14 and a 15 touchdown streak with no interceptions. It might have even been longer than that in this last season. And 85 and 12 touchdowns interceptions in the last two seasons with 9.7 yards per attempt. I don't care if you're throwing to, you know, two of the great wide receivers of all time. That's still fantastic. He's towards the high end in terms of time to throw, so he's taking his time in the pocket. I do credit the offensive line with that a lot, that there weren't a lot of hurried or rushed throws. So, you know, from a context standpoint, that might be a more significant concern with where he might end up in the NFL. He still did not get sacked often, and he gets some of the credit. The line gets also some of the credit for that because both of the pressure number and the sacks as a percentage of pressure are both low in that case. And sacks as a percentage of pressure probably is slightly more on the quarterback. Being pressured at all is probably slightly more evaluation on the offensive line you're making. So I like that about him. Great touch on the deep balls. Talk a lot about, you know, cutting off a passing lane and not making it easy for a guy to hit a throw between level two and level three. And what we'd like to see from Ravens linebackers all these years, I've been whining about who they've had basically in coverage since CJ Mosley left. And the fact of the matter is, and before Roquan arrived, but the fact of the matter is there aren't that many guys who can do it well. And quarterbacks like Stroud have the ability to just basically throw at exactly the layer they need to at the to hit those level two to level three throws perfectly. You can't really drag the seam, I don't think, effectively against him and hope to take away a ball or even take away his confidence in throwing a football at the proper level because he's so good at fitting in there and he knows how to do it. Think I hit on that. What else do I want to say? I don't see any reason why he's not the number one pick. I don't really understand the young pick, although they're not too far apart as passers. I think Stroud's physical gifts with a very similar passing profile look very good. And I think he's pretty clearly the number one guy. I can see going to Richardson. I really can't see giving it to Young over Stroud. So Stroud ends up being my number one guy in this. And certainly we'll go in the top four again. And unfortunately the Ravens won't catch a riff of him.
Yeah. I think, you know, with Stroud, you're going to get a really good player. I'm fairly confident in that. Will he have the upside that I think a Richardson potentially has? That's why I would swing for the fences, so to speak. But there's I don't think there's any bad argument that you would make I don't think there's any strong argument why Stroud shouldn't be an option there at number one. Like he has all the kind of traits that you're looking for. Anything that you're dinging him for is probably a bit of a minor thing compared to some of the other players around him. You know, he's done pretty much everything you can do aside from, like, I guess winning a championship at the collegiate level. He's been an exceptional quarterback. So, yeah, I think, you know, someone's going to get a very good player. And, you know, what the environment that he goes to, like most of these players, is really going to dictate his NFL success, I think. So hopefully, you know, there's a place that works out for him well. And it's unlikely to be someone that the Ravens are going to see very often. So that's good for us, too.
So let's look back at our, because we had the same top five guys. We had Levis, Hooker, Richardson, Young, and Stroud, or each in our top five, not in exactly the same order, though we had the same five and four guys. when you look at those five guys and you compare it to, say, the 2018 first round, which had hit and miss results in the end. Yep. I think we were confused by Baker Mayfield, and he was a shorter quarterback, by the way, who didn't end up being as good as people hoped at number one, but had some flash in there for a little while. Then we had Rosen, whose career was a pancake. And we had Josh Allen, who obviously ended up being quite good. I'm forgetting the Sam Darnold
went, I think, 3 or 4 overall. He was one of the higher ones. Yeah, he went ahead of Allen, I think. He had a pretty bad career, I would say.
I would say too. It's still going on. It's still in progress, I'm sure, from Sam Darnold's perspective. But he's about to get replaced, right, in Carolina. If he's even still there, I probably don't know, honestly, what's happened to him this offseason.
I'm not sure. I think he might have gotten picked up by the Rams. Not sure.
All right. Well, anyway, you see, the top five guys, how many would you say have a 75% chance to be an NFL star? Meaning that they're in the discussion to be one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL. How many are a 75% chance to be that of this group?
So
there's only one guy, I think, who really fits that bill. I mean, there's good projections on the other guys, but
yeah, I mean, if the 75% chance, I would probably put to Stroud. I think he's the one guy who has the highest percent chance of being an NFL star. I still think, you know, Richardson has a higher ceiling, but the chance of him getting there is probably lower. I'd probably put him at more like in the 50 to 60% chance of kind of making it. But I do think with him, you still get a floor. That's pretty good. And that's why I would be willing to take the risk with him. But yeah, definitely, I think if you're looking at it from that perspective, you're going with Stroud.
Yeah. And I'm not meaning to beat on you for your number one pick. I didn't mean that at all. Cause I agree with you that with Richardson, that you do have definitely a higher upside, or as I would handicap it right now, a higher upside than you have with Stroud. I think that's legitimate. And I, you know, the people who like Bryce Young, that's fine too. He certainly could be a star in the league. I'm not saying he's not going to be, he's my number two guy. I'm saying he has more of a chance probably than Richardson from my perspective. A guy like Hooker, there's lots of question marks here, and it's not that he hasn't been great at college, because he has been. It's just a matter of coming back from an injury at his age. What additional development can we see to him relative to the younger quarterbacks? And I think we've beaten that kind of topic to death, so maybe we don't need to keep doing it. All right. Gabe, always wonderful talking football with you on any topic, but this has been especially fun to go through the quarterbacks with you. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. It's the best way to get in touch, at Gabe Fergie. I'm a really, really big fan of Baltimore sports, Ravens, Orioles, willing to, you know, chat with pretty much anybody about that. So, you know, if you want to ask me a question, just, you know, have a conversation about it, you know, send me a DM, send me on Twitter, follow me, I'll follow you back. I really like to just, you know, get all the perspectives and all the different kind of ideas and you know, people with on Twitter, you have varying people that you listen to, so it's good to kind of get all the different perspectives, and it's one of the things that I really like about that platform. So yeah, you can find me there, and love to talk with you.
All right, outstanding. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short and you'd like to come on and talk about a draft topic, we have a little bit of time with that. A post-draft topic, there will be time for that. And there'll be a lot of time before the season starts for whatever kind of off-season topics you have, franchise building. I'll be doing a series of looking at two particular Ravens again. If you look back to last year's pods that had one defensive and one offensive player for a number of different people, I'll be doing some of that. If you'd like to be on one of those, let me know. But that one play, I'm still looking for people to do that. And I can help you out for that. If you don't have a play or you don't know what plays have been taken or whatever, there's a lot of good options still left out there. I'd love to talk to you, and I want to make it as open a mic as we possibly can. And please just hit me with a DM on Twitter. I'll respond very quickly. The other messages on Twitter, I want to speak to this really quickly. I have not been as responsive this draft season at just spending an unbelievable amount of time watching tape. And really enjoying it. I can't take a lot of time off of Twitter, because if I have my tweet deck up and I'm watching tape on another machine, I lose focus on what I'm doing. And so I apologize if it's taken me a little bit of time to get back on that, but I will be back and we'll be having our own draft night. Gabe, I think you're probably joining us for part of that at least, right?
I might be able to. I might also be on an airplane. So we'll see. I'll let you know about that.
All right.
I'll probably chime in for at least a couple hours of it.
That'd be wonderful. Even if it's the second day or whatever. I remember now you've got a trip you're making that weekend. But anyway, we'd love to have our regulars, and we'll be watching the draft together. It's something we'll be doing with in conjunction with Huddle Up Films and simulcasting. I just want to say, if you haven't done that yet, give it a try. Maybe look at last year's if you want to see what it's like. But it's a lot of people just enjoying watching the draft from a completely Ravens-centric perspective. We don't care what the number one pick who's going to somebody else had for breakfast. We care about how why the number one pick affects who the Ravens might get with a later pick. So it's all of our attention is directed that way. And if you're a Ravens fan, there's no place better to watch the draft. And we just have a lot of fun doing it. Gabe, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks again for having me, Ken. Always a pleasure being on your podcast.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.